Blog Talk Radio.
Recording an episode of my show right now. Don't tell anyone. It's only taken half hour. Or man.
Testing. Should be good to go. Double check. Audio. Input. Yes. Output. Yes. Good. Okay. Well, we're experiencing some delays, but I might as well say something, huh? If there's anyone listening live, my guest today is going to be a banker. He is a. Make sure I get it right. That's good. We got that out of the way. We got the cough out of the way before the actual show starts. Okay. He is the vice chairman of a bank, it's a regional bank. It's not a big national bank like Bank of America or something, but it's a growing regional bank, and I'll ask him kind of what the distinction is there. But I met Josh at a job fair, of all places. I crashed a job fair, local one, when I moved back to Missouri, And after my family's restaurant closed down, due in part, in large part, to unpayable debts to banks. And I went to this job fair that my dad told me about. We got a message here. Oh, that's from someone else. So I went to this job fair, and just as I expected, it was primarily, sorry, this is getting fucked up. I'm going to put this on silent. He's waiting for his, waiting for his assistant. 1 minute. Sorry. I'm going to edit all this out. We're going to start over. If you're listening, just, fuck, I'm sorry, guys. Okay, so welcome to what's going to be episode 10 of Tripolar. I'm your host, Nico Minetti. I'm going to go ahead and start the show without my guest because he's having some delays doing important banker shit. He's a banker. He is a vice chairman of a growing regional bank called Lead Bank. I met him, I don't know how many months ago it was because, again, I have no good concept of time, but I met him at a job fair. It was a college job fair, and I found myself there after college, after grad school, after law school, after running a business that failed, largely in part because of issues with bank loans. And I went to this job fair because my dad, who was a professor at the local university was being held at, recommended I go. I was unemployed. I believe at this time I was just editing my movie, Sincerely Forever, which has yet to be released. More on that later. But I went to this job fair with extremely low expectations and a healthy sense of shame because I wasn't even supposed to be there. I wasn't even a student. It was meant for, you know, students who were about to graduate, and I didn't even go to that college. I'd taken, like, one class there over the summer to get around having to take a math prereq type of deal, done some shenanigans there. But someone listening to this is going to investigate and get my diploma revoked. But I went to this thing with extremely low expectations, and rightfully so. I figured if it was like any other job fair I'd been to, there's going to be you're going to run into two types of people. There's going to be people who work for some big, huge company, and that's the way they can put it, you know, on the advertisements, like, hey, General Electric's going to be there, Fox is going to be there, or, you know, whatever the big recognizable company is. And you're going to show up, they're going to have maybe some keychains you could take, maybe some pens, and they're going to say, apply for our jobs online. And you'd be like, well, fuck. I mean, I could have done that without coming in. So there's the big names that aren't going to hire on the spot. They're not even in charge of hiring. They have nothing to do with it, probably. Their job's like, I don't know, just sit at a table and hand out keychains. Then you have the people who actually will hire you, and they are exclusively salespeople. You can walk in there and find probably 20 different jobs that actually would hire you selling something, usually insurance. And I almost started working for one of these companies once from a job fair. When I was in law school, I went to a job fair. I almost dropped out of law school to start working for Northwestern Mutual, which is a big, you know, a big insurance company, and I'd be like a financial advisor. And I gradually realized that why the fuck would anybody give me their money? Because I couldn't even manage my own. So I didn't become a financial advisor, and I'm glad I didn't because it's an extremely tough racket. And, you know, these places will lure you in telling you they make like, you know, our main guy's making like $500,000 a day. He just sits in his office and jerks off under his desk, you know. They won't use that terminology, but that'll be the idea they convey, is that it's extremely easy to make a good living once you kind of build up that client base. Once you put in your few years of hard work, then it's residual income just rolling in. And, you know, it's very appealing. You get to wear a suit. You get to work for a company that's, you know, worth $78 billion, whatever the hell they say it is. Hey, here's a tip. Here's a quick tip for all y'all who might be applying for jobs soon. When a company boasts about how big they are in terms of assets, in terms of, you know, market share, if they talk about how wealthy the company is, walk away. Any company that's going to brag about how rich they are is rich because they're not giving any of that money to their employees. So you're not getting any of that money. Don't worry about it. You're not getting most of that money. They probably don't want to give you any of it. They might make you pay to join. That sounds ridiculous, but it's true. There's plenty of schemes out there where they're going to charge you to work for them. Best case is an internship. So I'm getting a little distracted, but that's some good advice for you. Oh, and another one. If you ever hear the phrase unlimited income potential, walk the fuck out. Turn around and stroll towards that exit. Unlimited income potential also means unlimited no income potential. That means it's going to be a commission-based position, and that's just their fancy way of saying, we're not going to pay you, but you can make $1 million. So don't work for a company that talks about how much money they have or a company who tells you how much money you could make. Those aren't going to be legit. So you got the people who aren't going to hire on the spot, and then you got the people who will hire you on the spot, essentially, but they're not going to pay you. So I was showing up fully expecting to run into those types of tables and then walk out. I figured, you know what, I'm not doing anything today. Worst case, I stock up on pens and keychains, and sometimes they got mugs, flashlights. Yeah, I'll just get a bunch of job swag, and the off chance that there's a good job for me, which why would there be, then, you know, we'll take it from there. So I'm strolling around. I'm seeing exactly what I expected to see. You know, the one company that I thought, like, oh, man, these guys seem pretty legit, was a home security company where you'd be doing sales for them. And it sounded like, you know, worst case, you're making like $70,000 a year. Sounds too good to be true. Was I interviewed with them. It's a call center. And they're all going to be call centers. I'm sorry. But at the job fairs in today's day and age, you're looking at a call center, maybe an internship, or, hey, apply online. Go there, bring a tote bag, get as much shit as you can because you're going to need it when you're employed. But that's a very cynical look on it. I'm sure people can have more luck at these than I did. But at the end of the day, I really do think it's kind of a show that these universities put on to imply that their degrees are leading to good jobs, because you have some big names show up. Hey, you can tell people, oh, yeah, last year at a job fair, 27 Fortune 500 companies that showed up and gave out some pens. But there was one guy there that I met. His name was Josh. And I liked this guy. I liked him because he just had a face that was just like, I'm killing it. He was kind of just had a little grin on him. He was really well put together, really well dressed, had cool glasses. You know, they were glasses that wouldn't work on most people. They were glasses that I dare say would be a mistake for most people, but they worked on him. They were slightly Monopoly guy-esque, like a modern iteration of a Monopoly guy sort of glasses, you know, kind of circular rimmed. But I was like, you know what, this guy's sharp. And we chatted and chatted for a bit, found out that he's an attorney who became a banker. I was going to be an attorney, you know, I dropped out, so we had that slightly in common, I guess. And yeah, so he got me intrigued because, I don't know, he seemed put together, he seemed happy, he didn't seem like he was trying to sell me something that was bullshit, and he was telling me about how they have a training program that's like 2 years long, where they hire someone and pay them while they train them to learn all the the different aspects of banking within an organization. So that to me is very interesting, because I hadn't heard of someone actually paying you to learn something and them investing that kind of time, where they really want to teach you how to work the whole ship. So I was intrigued. I was impressed. I applied. And that was probably the only place that I seriously applied to. I think it's the only place I did. No, there's a handful of other places that I didn't go out anywhere. So it was that in the alarm company. I did interview with them. I did a second interview with them. But I think the guy could tell that I wasn't jazzed about telemarketing. And that I hated my last telemarketing job. And that's not really how you get another telemarketing job. So I get my interview with this bank, right? And I'm like, oh, awesome. And you know, I'm going above and beyond to try to get this job, because I'm like, hey, man, it is rare that a good job actually rolls around in this economy, and it's rare that I meet a guy that I would actually like to work for, because this Josh guy, he had a sense of charisma, a sense of certainty, a sense of intellectual prowess that made me believe that he was a leader, and a leader worth following. And I still hold that opinion about the guy. He's one of the rare people you meet that you're like, okay, let's do this. Where are you going? I'm coming. And so I interviewed with them, and I was excited to interview with them. I did my best to adopt what I assumed was the kind of new to the banking industry persona, in terms of how I dressed, in terms of how I composed myself, in terms of the terminology I used. I tried to be pretty polished. But the way the interview worked was, it wasn't just a normal interview. I met with actually different people who were big time in the bank, and they just kind of had a conversation with me for 15, 20, 30 minutes each. And I thought that was really cool. That was a really good way to do it, because they're letting the whole team feel you out, and letting you feel out the whole team. And I got to say, I was impressed by the facility. It was my first thing that I was really impressed with. Because when you think of a bank, you think of a bank. This place was like a cabin in Manhattan, is how I would describe the architecture. It was very, it's got that, like, it felt like it was wood from like Noah's Ark, you know, fused with beautiful glass and really comfortable chairs, and it was multi-leveled, and it was just this big, really nice, really well thought out, interesting building. And the doors were these big glass, like extremely big glass doors, and there's just a lot I liked about it from an architectural standpoint. And it got me thinking, like, you know, bankers generally, they think in terms of ones and zeros, and it would be more cost-effective to have a cheaper building, especially in Missouri. It's in this little town in Missouri. There's nothing there. It's like a Target, maybe. I think they might have a Target. I think they have a Target, which makes them in a kind of upper-class city in Missouri. But this was a place that took pride in itself just as a building, I could tell. The energy of the people there was good. I was like, okay, I could see myself getting into this, actually. So the interviews went well, the talks went well, and then the last kind of phase of it was for me to go hang out with Josh again. And we went out to lunch. I went with him and another one of their banker guys. I don't remember all the terms, but I want to say he was essentially the last guy who went through the program that I was going to be entering if I got hired. And so I go to lunch with them. We have some Thai food. Chicken pad Thai, of course. That's what you always got to order when you order Thai food. Good lunch. And we got to talking, and I inevitably started talking about things that I swore I would not talk about. Actually, I think I may have succeeded in not talking about being a writer. I fail all interviews by bringing that up, and when they see that passion I have for writing and for storytelling and for filmmaking, for performing, for XYZ, all things that have nothing to do with the job I'm applying for, it sinks my ship. So I made such a conscious effort to not get into that stuff. But I want to say I eventually did. The thing, though, that made me want to have him on the episode was, I didn't get the job, by the way. I tried to hard close the job as if I was selling something over the phone, where we were kind of driving back, and they were like, "Well, do you have any more questions about anything?" And then I was just like, paused for a minute. I was like, "Yeah, I got one question left. Is there anything left that would prevent you from wanting to hire me?" And then there's this kind of like uncomfortable silence. Sort of like when you ask a girl on a date in middle school, back when you actually did ask girls on dates and it wasn't, all online and texting, and when you had to actually go to their locker and look them in the eyes and nervously whisper, "Do them movies?" Just like some utterance of words that sort of make sense, but based on your body language, they can tell you're asking them out. Instead of doing that, we do all kinds of stuff, but I'm getting off topic. My point with that was that I asked one of those, I put him in one of those situations where it was just like, now or never. And so I told him that I had a job offer from 24 Hour Fitness that I was about to accept, and I just needed to know because I prefer to work there. I thought that was a better fit for me. I would love to join their team, but I don't want to start working there and then quit right away because that's not the type of person I am. Boom, good sell, I thought. They didn't hire me on the spot. Apparently, they don't do that for banking jobs. But I came back into the bank the other week. I happened to be in the area, and I'd been wanting to get Josh on the show for a while. I reached out to him a ways back, and I talked to his assistant the other day, and she was able to arrange this meeting with him, and hopefully he's still able to do it. I'm not seeing anything yet. But yeah, and so I wanted to have him on to talk about things because he's a very intelligent person. He's been to Yale and Stanford, if I remember correctly. It's either Yale and Stanford or Harvard and Stanford. Pretty sure it was Yale and Stanford. Which in itself is like, what? Get the hell out of here. Only like presidents have done that. So this guy is very smart. And he studied non-bank shit. Like, and I believe he was like a comparative literature major at Yale or something like that. I mean, I'll ask him if we get him on still. But yeah, he's extremely intelligent. And during our lunch, we got to talking about money and how money is created when they make a loan. And I didn't know what that meant. So instead of going along with it, like, oh yeah, well, I know that because I'm become adequate fit for this position. Of course, yes, I agree. And but as soon as he kind of made that remark, I couldn't help but to keep asking about it because it didn't make sense to me. I was like, "What do you mean money's created?" And he tried to explain it to me, and I was just like, "Oh, wait, I still don't get it." And so I kept just asking about this, and I still didn't really get it by the time we left. And I watched videos on it, and I researched it, and I think I kind of get it now. I think I get it. That's what I wanted to talk to him about. But essentially, when a bank lends you money, they're not taking money from the vault and giving it to you and hoping that you'll give it back at the interest at the interest rates determined in your agreements. They are pushing some buttons on a keyboard, and that money is being like printed by the Federal Reserve and loaned to the bank by some other bank, and they loan it to you. And it's this whole fiasco that is truly baffling. And so I wanted to try to decode some of that and help us understand better the way our financial system works and how does this relate to mental health. Oh my God, it relates to mental health because all of our problems, where do they come from? Not all of them, but where do a huge majority of our problems come from? Our stress, our anxiety, our troubles, our travails. It comes from not being able to pay our bills. Not being able to pay our mortgage, not being able to make our car payment, our insurance payment, our this, that, the other. So we don't question the fact that we have to pay these fees to live. But why is my question? Why is it set up this way? If we have enough of everything for everyone, just if we were to design a new society right now, would we structure it the same way? Where it's designed so that you have to always be in debt and working to pay off that debt, because presumably if you didn't have debt to pay off, you wouldn't work. I think that's the philosophical underpinning of our economy, that no one's ever spells it out that way. No one even talks about it. But I think that's kind of how it goes. And this whole idea that that's just the way it is, well, that's what they say about everything until it changes. That's what they said about slavery, I'm sure. Well, you know, that's the way it is. And it probably takes maybe two generations for that thinking to really set in and for people to just agree. Well, that's what you're talking about. That's the way it is. So people are terrified of a word like socialism or communism or any new word that would replace what it is. And I'm not saying those are the solutions. I'm saying, though, that what we have sucks, in my opinion, because the top 1% have 90% of the money. I mean, what is money anyways? They just make it and they keep it? And they give us a little and we have to give it back? What? Why is this the way it works? It doesn't make any sense to me. It seems evil to me. It seems like a fiefdom. It seems like in the Middle Ages where they'd be like, okay, here's your plot of land. You're going to give us this much of everything that comes off this land and you get to live there. We won't kill you. That's sort of like how it works. It's like, hey, you get this house. You owe us for this house. You couldn't afford this house. We gave you the money to build this house. And give us all that money back, plus this amount for this amount of time. And there's good lenders and there's bad lenders. And the irony, though, is that to get a loan on favorable tradition, I'm sorry, to get a loan on favorable conditions, you generally have to already be in good financial standing. You have to have a demonstrable record of having paid similar loans and having kept up with your payments and been a good boy in terms of paying your allowance. Paying your allowance, that's a weird way of phrasing it. But that's kind of what it's like. It's like paying them what you agreed to pay them. Now, in principle, that works out fine. If it's kind of a local bank, then they give you money because they think that what you're going to do is going to make you a good deal of money, and then they'll make money because you pay them more money than they gave you. Makes sense. Yeah, I'm good with that. That's capitalism, the way most people would define it. But what we have is not that at all. What we have is something incredibly intricate, incredibly confounding, and incredibly exploitative. What we have is something where literally a handful of guys in suits are dictating the everything of everything. And it sounds impossible that there could be a handful of people, like 0.1%, to my understanding, that controls 90, 99% of the wealth. Like, as 1% controls 99% of they get 99% of all the new income. I don't know exactly what that means. Where's that income coming from? Probably off their investments, off their, what do they just keep most of the money the company makes? I don't know. But the point is, even if that was half true, if 50% of the people kept 90% of the money, I would think that that's bad. That doesn't seem fair. If it was half true, actually, it would be 2%. Even if it was like a 50th true, if it was just slightly true, then I think that was ridiculous. But we have in place is truly insane. So how does this relate to mental health? It's because our financial system is insane. We are living and cooperating with a system that exploits us. And we continue to do so day after day after day, year after year after year. And if we don't nut up generation after generation after generation. Now, this is madness. And it's woven into our political system. We all know this. These banks, these investment firms, these hedge funds, they buy candidates. They can do so in secret. They buy people who are going to vote the way they want to vote, to change the tax code the way they want it changed, to give them what they want to get to just stay super powerful and to get even more powerful. And it stems from greed, and it stems from this sense of entitlement, and just the way the system's set up, it's allowed to perpetuate because we allow our politicians to be purchased. I think this is changing. I really do. In this campaign, I believe it's changing. I think that we have candidates now, like Bernie Sanders, who are speaking for the people and who are financed by the people. His campaign is coming from people like me donating $10. Literally, it's all from little donations, almost all of it. You can read into it. He doesn't accept money from banks and from wealthy, millionaires. He has rules. And the money comes from just Joe Blows, who listened to what he says and said, yeah, you're right, that's bullshit. And why? Why are we doing it this way? Why are we letting ourselves slave away most of our lives, literally most of our lives, most of our day is spent working to just make enough of this imaginary stuff to pay these banks so they don't take everything we have? Why are we paying? Why are we killing ourselves so that our kids can be educated? And then we have to pay those bills for that education for tens of 20, 30, 40, 50, who knows how many years. Education is just getting more and more expensive. And they're loaning out more and more money. You're taking these kids who are 18 years old and you're giving them a loan for a couple hundred grand, essentially. Who would do that for in any other situation? If I wanted to start a podcast and I went to the bank and I said, hey, I'd like to take out a loan for $100,000 to create a podcast and then distribute it around the world, I think I could make money from ad revenue, from product placement, and, you know, I don't know, but give me a shot. I would get laughed out the goddamn door. But if I go up to the bank and say, hey, I want to go to school, I want to study, I don't know, we'll figure it out when I get there, but it costs like 30 grand a year, 50 grand a year, whatever it is, I don't know, I have no concept of what that means. I just have a vague expectation that I will pay it back because I will be making a lot of money when I graduate. They have some graphs on their fucking thing on their website that makes it look pretty sweet. So I think, you know, I think I'll go with it. And still not hearing them here. So I'm going to just keep talking. And so we let these kids, literally kids, people who are 18 years old, who have just inherited the ability to legally contract. This is the first time in their lives they could legally enter a binding agreement of this sort. And we're just flooding them with cash that they don't get that goes to the school, right? They get enough to eat food and to live. And the school charges them for that too. So the school keeps all that. Like, we'll feed them. We'll give them a place to stay and we'll feed them. All right, how about you just direct that money straight to us? It's mandatory they live on campus the first year. It's mandatory. And so I'm saying that the new mortgage crisis is the student loan crisis. The amount of debt we owe, we being anyone who went to college in my generation, is fucking insane. I want to say it's more than all credit card debt combined at this point. It's like you could have another war in Iraq for what we owe. It is ridiculous. I refuse to pay it. That's my approach. It beats me down so much emotionally. It crushes my soul so much to look at these bills, to look at these figures, and compare it to what I'm actually making and to what I actually control. It crushes me. So I ignore them. I tell them to go fuck themselves. And that's my only response. I can't pay it. Even if I could, why should I? Why should I? I worked really hard for 4 years. 5, 6 years, personally. We worked for all these years, learned all these things. We want to contribute them. We want to direct them towards a career, towards something that's going to better the whole country. We want to become active players in this economy. And you want to tie me down with more debt than I could possibly pay off in any reasonable time frame? It's going to take me the amount of time it should take to pay off, to maybe pay off a house, if that. You're going to make me pay that? And I'm going to graduate and I'm having no job? You want to take half of my money? You want to take a huge amount of my money? Because what? Because you can? It's unfair. It's unjust. It's un-American. And if we're to sit back, stand idly by, and allow the system to perpetuate itself, we contribute to that system. So I would encourage my listeners to not take out those loans. If you're about to go to college, don't do it. Go online, learn shit. It's all there. If it costs too much, don't go. If you wouldn't spend that, if it costs more than a car you want, don't go. It's overpriced. Go somewhere where it's well-priced. There aren't many places. Try to find one. You're taking it from a guy who's got a lot of education, a lot of expensive education. Do I regret it? No, I loved it. I wish everyone could go to college. I think that it was a great experience. I think I learned a lot of people. I met a lot of people that I'm so glad I met, and it's going to change my life having known those people and being connected with those people still. And I learned so much. And but my point is, it cost more than it should have. And unless we reform the system, don't participate in it. Don't take out those loans. And don't pay those loans. I think if everyone did what I'm doing, just said, fuck yourself. I mean, I'm no economist, but what are they going to do? Repossess my education? Maybe you can garnish my wage. Okay, once I get one that's garnishable, once I'm making enough money for you to take it, I guess you can. That's what I'm saying. It's soul-crushing. It is fucking soul-crushing that we can go from being little kids, young teenagers, just coming out of our teenage years, click some things that we couldn't read. It's impossible to understand this legal jargon at 18 years old. I was just playing soccer. My chief concern was, will I be able to score a goal this week and impress the girl on the cheerleading squad? You think I know what the fuck a 20-year loan is? No, I don't know what that is. I don't know what all these words on this paper says. All I know is I got to click it to be able to go to the fun place where I learn things that everyone goes to at this stage. I worked really hard. I got good grades. I got these test scores, blah, blah, blah. I got in here. Of course that's where I'm going to go. I'm going to click the thing. Do you think anyone appreciates the gravitas of that decision when they're 18 years old? Of course not. How could they? If you won't lend these people money to actually start a business, don't lend it to them to go to college. Make schools get cheaper. Make it manageable. Slave kids. Because that's the goal. I'm telling you, that is the goal of these banks. And I don't think it's the goal of the bank of the guy I'm supposed to be interviewing right now. Which, I mean, maybe he'll still be able to come on. I'm still not hearing anything. But, you know, the goal of these banks, these national banks, these people who co-opted with Sally Mae, whatever the fuck that even was. Now it's Navient. What they did was they took something that was supposed to be good, a government decision that everyone should be able to go to college. The government basically co-signed on your loans to go to college. And then so what happened? A bunch of people went to college. Good. But then people realized, hey, Uncle Sam's co-signing. They could make it cost more, huh? We can make it cost whatever we want. And they did. And then these people started making private student loans. You know, Discover, all these banks, they'll make private student loans for you. And those interest rates are tremendous. They're way more exploitative than the ones that are government, you know, connected to the government, the Pell Grants, grants actually you get to keep it. Anyways, my point is, you could research more if you want. My point is, it is fucking soul-crushing to release these kids that just paid a fortune to learn things that they now presumably want to contribute to society, and to say they have to pay for that knowledge they have now. They have to pay for that expertise and ability they have to make your goddamn life better, by the way. Who thinks he's going to be taking care of you when you're older? Who do you think is going to be solving all these problems you left behind? Who do you think is going to be fixing the environment? Who do you think is going to be preventing wars from occurring? Who do you think is going to be inventing shit for you to use? It's going to be us. It's going to be the smart people who are smart in part because you let us go to school. Don't charge us for that for the rest of our lives. And then don't dangle carrots in front of our eyes and say everything nice that we want to have, we're going to have to pay on that for the rest of our lives. I'm telling you, that's the way our system's designed to function. And if you think I'm just like a conspiracy theorist or someone who's just whining because he doesn't want to pay his student loans, look at the rest of the world. We are the only country that allows this madness. Look at Europe. They don't. A lot of the schools, it's free. I'm not kidding. It's free to go to college. The ones that charge you, it's cheap. You would laugh at how cheap it is compared to our schools in America. You're paying maybe like $5,000, where it costs 50 here. You're paying a small amount because those societies know that they want to invest in the future of their nation. They want everyone to get educated, so they incentivize them to do it. Here, we trick people to do it. We get them to invest fully in a vague expectation that there's a job on the other side of it. Because on top of how much you're going to charge me, I'm assuming you're at least going to have a job for me to pay it off when I get out. But I'm telling you, look, it's because these banks run things. They don't care. In fact, they want you to fail. They want you to succeed just enough that you can pay them for as long as you possibly can. They want every cent they can get out of you. Why? I couldn't tell you. I couldn't tell you. The people who have all this wealth, who are running these banks, why do they want to do this? I couldn't tell you. If you have that much power, that much money, that much influence, that you can have everything you want in life, why do you want to drain everyone below you of everything they have? Why do you want to squeeze them as hard as you can? That's what's happening. That's what's happening with these banks. That's what's happening with the system. And to make it even more confusing and strange and despicable, the banks are borrowing the money that they lend you. These huge banks are borrowing the money from the Federal Reserve. What's the Federal Reserve, you ask? Great question. No one fucking knows. It doesn't make any sense. It's not even a government institution. It was created, I believe it was by the Rockefellers, like literally. I think that they had a big hand in this. It was created as like a separate institution that would create the currency for the government, right? Which I guess kind of makes sense. Not really. You should just have the government make the money the government gives out. That makes sense. But no, they're like, all right, let's have a separate thing where we print the money, and then we'll give the money to the banks. The banks give the money to people give the money back to the banks. You know, you give us back the money. Wait, right there is where I would say, wait, what? We give you back the money? What the fuck? Why do we owe you money? We're the government. We're the people in charge. Why would we pay you? Because you printed the money? Are you kidding me? I could have anybody print the money. We could build a printing press in the basement of the White House right now. Fuck you. We'll print our own money. But no, what they did was they said, all right, whoever's in charge of the Federal Reserve, it was probably like these super wealthy guys who were controlling the government at the time. I'll research it more. I've tried to research it. I find it immensely confusing. But the fact of the matter is, your money does not belong to the government. Your money is lent to the government, who then uses it on things. That's how our country can be in debt. It's in debt. When you say, like, oh, our country owes all this money, how? How do we owe money? How does a nation owe money? It's because we owe this thing, this Federal Reserve thing, that's presumably controlled by these 1%er guys. I don't know. But what I'm saying is, like, that's a fact. Look on your dollar bill if you don't believe me. It's a Federal Reserve note. Now, you would think Federal Reserve. Yeah, it's the federal government. No, it's a thing. It's a weird offshoot of the government. It's a sibling, a retarded nephew of the government that's evil. And that's the best way I can think to describe it. Now, maybe I'm wrong. I want to explore this idea. I hope that I can get this guy on the show so we can talk about it. I mean, I want someone to tell me I'm wrong, and then I'm crazy. And that's not how it works, Nico. Of course it doesn't work that way. That would be insane. You're the crazy one, not the whole system. I agree, I'm a crazy one, but I think the system's crazy too. And I think you're all crazy for going along with it. Look, we need to just press pause. We get so wrapped up in our work week. Because we need to go to work. Why? Because we need to pay the bills. Why? Because we'll lose everything we have if we don't. We need to press pause for a second and say, why? Why will I lose everything? Is this fair? Is this American? Is this the way we were meant to live? Where our main motivation in life is to not lose the things we have? You don't really own anything if the bank owns it. They're letting you stay there until you pay what you said you'd pay them, which by the definition of your contract, is going to take you a long time. It's going to take a long time for you to pay for the thing that you think you have. And then if you stop paying for it, they'll take it back. You could have a car and you could pay 90% of it off. If you don't make the last 10% of the payments, they could take it back and they'll sell it and keep the difference. And it sounds like it would never happen. It sounds like it would be evil. That's some evil shit. No one's going to do that. No one's going to create a system that oppresses its own people and treats them like numbers on a spreadsheet and takes their shit if they don't pay them back everything they're owed. Well, that's what we have. And so, going into this next election, keep that in mind. Ask yourself some fundamental questions. Do I want to vote for a candidate who came up in this system, who is a part of this system, and who is financed by the system? I'm not going to tell you who to vote for, but I'm going to tell you who not to vote for. Do not vote for anyone whose last name is Bush or whose last name is Clinton. Write that down. Clinton, put an X to it. Bush, put an X to it. Why? Because they're a goddamn dynasty. They've been presidents for these cute families have been in power for like a decade. They're like a fucking Ching Chang dynasty. You're going to look back at it in history books and they're not going to refer to it as the elections. They're going to refer to it as the reign of the Bush era. But, you know, it's insane, man. These guys were fighting wars that this guy's dad had with people. You know, George Bush can start a war because his dad had a war with this guy because he wants revenge. I mean, is it more complicated than that? Sure. But, I mean, if you were reading a history book, if this was like Greek history, yeah, that's what it'd say. And King Bush, the son of King Bush, enacted revenge on the ruler of Iraq who defied the king of America. You know, it's insane. And we are insane for cooperating with that system. Is there a way to fix it? I don't know. Maybe the solution is drastic. Maybe the solution is states need to branch off, create their own little governments, do some Ayn Rand, Atlas Shrugged type of shit, but from a different perspective. Maybe Texas needs to put a wall around Texas and say, hey, that Federal Reserve money, nah, no good here. You got Texan coin, and it's made out of pure gold, son. Pure gold mine from now. That sounds crazy. Why? It's not. Think about it. Why is it crazy? Money is an idea. Money is a shared cooperative system. We're saying we agree to set our natural human instincts to take things we want from who is weaker than us aside, and we're all going to play a game. This game has rules that we're all going to follow. We're going to do it this way because it allows us to progress and to act collectively in a more rational, reasonable, polite, and just comfortable manner. I don't have to worry about someone coming and killing my family and taking all of my things that are valuable and taking my wife from me and making her join, you know, this warlord's tribe, because we have all these things in place that are great. Police, government, laws, regulation, money. Yeah, it's all a logical step forward for mankind. But the problem is, when you forget it's an idea, and an idea that can be manipulated by a handful of people who literally just control numbers, who control databases, printing presses, when you realize that that your whole life revolves around the decisions these guys make, you have to ask yourself, are you crazy? Are you crazy to continue living in a country that thinks that's okay, that that's the status quo, that we're meant to spend our whole lives trying to pay for being alive? Is it like that around the world? I don't know, man. I haven't been around the whole world. What I know is that in other countries, it's not this oppressive. They tax you more, maybe, but guess what? Everyone go to the hospital. Everyone could afford the things they need. When I was in Australia, I was making twice as much money as I am as an illegal immigrant in Australia. I was a student studying abroad. I got an undocumented job working at a restaurant waiting tables. And they don't even tip in Australia, by the way. If they feel like it, they tip. I got a good amount of tips because I'm a really good waiter. What can I say? But I like Donald Trump. I'm a really good waiter. What could I say? They like to tip me. They throw money my way. I don't complain. So, but my point is, if I can go to Australia and I can make more money waiting tables as an undocumented worker, the equivalent of a Mexican guy sneaking into America, then I can in America as a guy with multiple degrees that I now have to still pay for. Something's remarkably wrong. Something is remarkably wrong. These other countries have it better. We call ourselves the greatest nation in the world. I feel like a lot of that's propaganda. I feel like a lot of that's propaganda for us to just be able to say that and feel that and think that and agree with that. Say, we're the best country in the world. We're the wealthiest country in the world. We're the this, that, the other. You know how I said that when a company is telling you that they're worth all this money, that the corporation is one of the biggest corporations in the world, you know, we control over $17 trillion in assets, and, you know, we're on the Forbes 500 list, number 1.2, and, you know, the CEO has a jet, and his jet pilot has a helicopter, and his helicopter pilot has a golden retriever literally genetically modified to be made of gold, then, you know, who cares? Because that has nothing to do with what you're going to give me. And that's the way I feel about the U.S., the United States of America. We're the wealthiest country in the world. Okay. Am I wealthy? No. Are you wealthy? No. Is anyone you know wealthy? Maybe. Probably not. Not wealthy like these guys running things. This could all be construed as a campaign ad for Bernie Sanders. He's the only guy here talking about these things in a way kind of like I am. He's the only guy, like, shouting, why are we okay with this bullshit? Why are we endorsing it and tacitly standing by and cooperating with a broken system? Why don't we say, no more, we're changing it, we're not playing this game anymore. If I show up to the board game and I want to play Monopoly, I'm not going to play if 99% of the money is one player has. Why? Because I'm not going to win that game. It's statistically impossible. We're in a similar game right now, folks. One of the players has 99% of the money. The rest of us, we're just pass and go. We're collecting our $200 and it's just enough to get us around the board another year. Just enough to barely make it. Everywhere we land, we got to pay some money. We got to pay a little money. Maybe we make a little money so we could pay the money we owe. Maybe we make a little money off someone else. Maybe we exploit someone else. We have to. We have no choice so we could pay the guy we owe. He started out with 99% of the money. Of course he's winning. Wake up, people. I don't think my guest is going to make it today. But that's all right. We still had a good show here. Depressing show, for sure. But a good show. And this lends itself to a topic I want to do an actual episode on, where I talk to maybe someone pretty well qualified to discuss this topic. But the topic is depressive realism. Depressive realism is the idea that people who are depressed, even if they're clinically depressed, aren't necessarily depressed because there's something wrong with them. A lot of times they're depressed because they see the world as it is. And as it is depressing. They see the suffering of the world. They see the unjustness of the world. They see people starving. They see people being killed. They see people being exploited. They see us putting all our focus on buying some material goods to make ourselves feel powerful for a minute. To make other people look at us and say, that guy made it. To make a woman think that I could be a provider for you based on the way I can pose myself, the clothes I wear, based on where I can take you for dinner, how much of a tip I can leave, this facade I have to put up. Because deep down I know I can't hold a family. I don't want to bring a family into this system. I can't even make it in the system. How could I support a woman and children? I'm not going to have them. I'm not going to get married. I don't have the confidence to approach a woman and say, we're going to be fine, babe. Oh, I can't. I wish I could. I hope I can someday. I think I'm a genius. I think I'm capable of making money. If anyone can make money doing the type of thing I do, but yeah, maybe I'll become rich and not give a fuck anymore. Right? Maybe that's how it works. Maybe as soon as you're the monopoly guy with the 99% of the money, maybe once he gives you a couple $500 bills, you're just like, oh, fuck all those other guys. I hope I'm not like that. I hope I still hold these ideas that we need to fix this system that's broken. Because, look, people don't act on out of compassion for the most part. Let me put it this way. Powerful people don't act out of compassion, because if you become powerful, you probably had to do some not nice things. Or at least the people around you who put you in power had to do some not nice things, because power doesn't get given away. Power gets taken. So if you're a powerful person, you probably are not the most compassionate of people. So let me make an argument that would appeal not only to people who try to put others first, try to think of the whole instead of the self. Let me put an argument forward. You guys are fucked if you leave it this way. You guys are fucked. Our species, mankind, is fucked. Because you need people to be brilliant. You need people to be great. You're not letting them be. You are not letting geniuses be geniuses. You are not letting smart people become brilliant people. You are not letting these people expound on their full human potential, because you're tying them down with imaginary deals they didn't want to make and shouldn't have made and had to make. You're tying them down and you're preventing them from really doing what they want to do with their lives, their passion. The reason I say that affects you is because this planet is literally fucking being destroyed by greed. The environment is literally crumbling before our eyes. Every day it's getting worse because we won't stop polluting it. And I can't argue that that's true. All these scientists say it's true. Why would they say that if it wasn't true? What's in it for them? You think these scientists are making a fortune because they're lying about the universe, you know, the world being in trouble? No! The people who are lying about it are the people who don't want to lose out on their business, who want to keep mining coal, who want to keep selling gas, who want to keep selling oil, who maybe the people who produce the oil are running the government. Look at a goddamn book, they are. Destroying the world. There will not be a world because of greed. If we continue to perpetuate this system where genius is kept in a wrapper, when it's tied down and it's in quicksand, when you take people and you put them in quicksand and you pull them out just enough for them to keep their head above the quicksand, but you keep them always in the quicksand, you're going to create a system where people have to work jobs they don't want to work. They have to do things they don't want to do. They have to fall short of their own potential because they need to just survive in the stupid economy that we've created. There is enough of everything for everyone. I repeat, there is enough of everything for everyone. One more time. There is enough of everything for everyone. Why doesn't everyone have whatever they need? There's enough food for everyone. There are enough people who want to fix the infrastructure of this country to fix it. Why is it not being done? Why can a bridge not be made? Why can a road not be repaved? Why can something not be invented? Money? What the fuck is money? Money is an idea. Money is the rules of a game. The thing is, we're supposed to control those rules. We're supposed to elect officials who are sensible, who care about the future of our country and therefore the future of our world. We're not supposed to elect motherfuckers who have been in office for their whole lives. Their families grew up in it. They're a part of that system. They're so deeply entrenched in it. They were one of the creators of it. Do not vote for a Bush. Do not vote for a Clinton. Vote for Donald Trump if you want. I would rather see Donald Trump become the president than George Bush. Jeb Bush. See, the names are so similar, I can't even remember. I can't even keep them straight. Hillary Clinton. The puppets, guys. You know what's going to happen if you elect them. What we have now will continue. I like to believe Obama tried to change it. He became a part of it. Look in his eyes. Look at how he aged. He came in there, Wayne Brady, and is coming out. Is coming out Morgan Freeman. It destroyed him. Actually. I mean, he made it through it. I like the guy, but couldn't change it on his own, man. Because he didn't have us behind him. Maybe this time around we can fix it. So I think Donald Trump will make a good president. The idea sounds insane to me, but I would prefer it to what we got now. I think Bernie Sanders is the most sensible guy I've heard. And that's who I plan to vote for. And I think you should too. Whatever you do, just please don't vote for what we got now. And outside of voting, because I know what you think, it doesn't matter how I vote. It's not going to change. Maybe you're right. What can you do outside of voting? Think drastically. It's a drastic situation we have here, people. Like I said, we all know it. We just don't talk about it. Not only are we not all living in much worse conditions than we need to live in, and not feeding people, and not inventing things, and not creating things, and not fixing things, and not improving the world, because we owe money on the things we have. No. Not only that, we're watching the world die. We're killing the world. We have the technology to substitute these things that are destroying the environment. Why aren't we using them? They're gradually becoming mainstream. Why gradually? Why don't we have leadership that says, we're done with oil, we're moving to electric and solar power today? Anyone who wants to help, you have a job. Student loan debts, wiped out. Fuck that. You don't owe it. Let's take that money that you would have spent giving it back to who? These banks who they're gambling with it overseas. They're gambling on it with each other. That's how the crisis really happened, because they were gambling with all this wealth that they created that came from thin air. Because they want a little more than they have. We're going to give it to them? No. No. No more. That's what our leadership should do. Drastic things. We're just comfortable enough to avert revolution. We have been kept just comfortable enough to not get violent. And you see it, like in Ferguson. People are getting a little violent. People are getting a little rowdy. Good. People are doing something about it. Break a window. Say a cuss word. Do something. Occupy Wall Street. That was something. Did it achieve anything? Not really. It was something. I mean, people forget that the Second Amendment right that they're always trying to defend, Republicans, it's pitched as this whole thing that it was meant to, like, prevent muggers from shooting, or someone from, you know, doing a home invasion, being able to shoot them, or, you know, you're just able to collect guns because it's cool. No, the reason they put that in there, and this sounds crazy. I mean, you're going to think this sounds crazy. This is what it is. They put that in there so you could rebel against the government if they were being an idiot, if they were oppressing you. That's literally why it's in there. Because they just came from England, where a king was telling them everything to do, and taking their money and taxing them and exploiting them and making them a slave to his kingdom. So they said, never again. They said, this government will never become that, because we're going to let people keep guns. And even if we make people all these states combined, we all become one unified thing, we're going to let everyone always have weapons because our government is never going to be able to just exploit everyone because they're in power. How extreme does that sound? That they wanted you to be able to violently reform the government if necessary? I'm probably on a watch list just for bringing that up. It's in the fucking Constitution, guys. Do I think that's what should happen? No, I hope not. But is it so crazy to think that it would be wrong? Would it be wrong if a bunch of people stormed the Capitol building with guns, kicked all the senators out and said, "We're the senators for a minute. We're going to do senators like we're going to be, it's going to be like jury duty, because I guarantee you the average American could vote better on this thing, can make these decisions better." Would I be upset if I had a president who declared martial law to shut down these things that are destroying our government, who did something drastic, like just tell everyone, "Hey, these debts are erased. We have a new system. Here's the new system. We're starting from scratch. The money, new money. New money, created new money. Everybody gets this amount. Everybody pays back this amount in tax across the board. It's fair." Common fucking sense things could happen if we let them or made them. Now, this is just a guy talking to himself alone in a room. But hey, that's still allowed. That's more powerful than the right to bear arms, the right to bear your voice. I can say things that you agree with, that you confide in, you believe in. Maybe I'm not the one to act, or maybe you are. Maybe if we all unite, everyone who thinks this is stupid, this is wrong, this is bullshit, maybe there could be a change. If not, maybe it's time to move. Move to another country where this isn't the system. Yeah, I mean, I hope I still get this guy on. I still do think he'd be a good guest. Maybe he'd have something to say about all these radical ideas I have about how these banks are strangling the life out of the world. They're evil empires, and that we just play by the rules. They have all the monopoly money, and so we're just gonna keep pass and go, and just hope we make it to that starting point again, so we get another $200, so we can just barely make it by, if at all. They're going to take all our houses away if we can't. That's not right, man. If you call yourself a Christian, by the way, I don't call myself a Christian, but if you do, which at least half of America does, you need to ask yourself, is this what Jesus would be doing? Is this how Jesus would be running a country? I know you're going to think, he says pay unto Caesar what is Caesar's, because you don't give a shit about what happens in the world, you're going to the afterlife. Put that aside. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Share, help, feed the poor, nurse the sick, help the wounded. These are things Jesus would be doing. Are those the priorities you hear coming from our candidates? Are those the reforms you see? No. The reforms you see are just, they're so nominal, it's invisible. For all of this health care reform stuff that happened in Obama's presidency, for all the controversy, all the bullshit I had to watch on the news, everything we had to look at, it doesn't feel any different to me. It feels the fucking same. I have to pay $300 a month to get these pills that cost 5 cents. If that, for them to create, probably a fraction of a penny. To stay sane, I need to pay $300 a month. Is that fair? Everyone's doing it. Everyone has to pay all this. Why? Why can't we just treat people? Why can't we just give them what they need? They'll be better. They'll be better in life. They'll be better at what they do. What I'm talking about doing is so profoundly drastic, it's hard to even imagine reforming an entire economic system. But the people who started this country, it's exactly what they did. They created their own money. They said, "We're done with you, England." And I think maybe that's what's going to happen in our country. Maybe a state. Maybe a group of people. I don't know. Maybe they really will do something that drastic. Maybe they will say, okay, we're done with the U.S. currency. Anything that says Federal Reserve on it, we're burning. And we're starting our own currency, and we're going to run things the way we want to run it. And what, are you going to have a civil war with us? You're going to have a civil war in today's day and age with nukes in our own country? Who's going to participate in that? I'm not. I'm not going to go fight Texas because they decided to leave the Union. I'm not going to go fight fucking, you know, Ohio. California says they're their own country. Okay, I'll probably move back. That's more of my take, though. If you don't have leadership in place, if you don't have people who are actually going to do these things, someone needs to step up. Someone needs to do something, man. Otherwise, we're just a bunch of jerk-offs who skidded by our lives and then died and then left our kids with all these fucking problems. Our lives were a lot worse than they could have been. I mean, look, this is depressive realism in action, guys. This is me depressed. This is me depressed because I feel like we're all fucked because we're not smart enough to do anything and we're too afraid to do anything and we don't even know how to do anything. But being depressed is maybe the first step because maybe when you're depressed, you're making yourself see things as they really are rather than living in this illusion that we're the most wealthy, powerful, well-off country in the world. Like, by what metric? By a metric that applies to you, me, your family, your friends, the people you actually have a beer with? Are they doing fine? I bet they're struggling. I bet most of them are struggling. Even the ones who are driving a Corvette, probably struggling. Doesn't have to be this way, guys. I recommend putting some serious thought in this next election. Because maybe it's all rigged. Maybe a Bush or a Clinton's going to win no matter what. In which case, I fully support, you know, some states segregating. I think that'd be great, to be honest. I would love to see something crazy happen. That would force change. Vote for Bernie Sanders. You're not going to vote for Bernie Sanders. Vote for Donald Trump. Just don't vote for fucking... Just vote for anyone. Just please vote for someone who's actually speaking words that are coming from their mouth and not from their donors. You know the difference if you listen. Vote for them. Hopefully someone other than a Bush or a Clinton gets elected. And hopefully something drastic happens through the proper legislative process. If not, I would love to see some people doing some shit that would shake it up. I would love to see some states creating their own currency. Some people breaking off and saying, no more. Otherwise, I mean, honestly, and this is me just depressed talking. I don't always feel this way. I do love my country. I am proud of so many things about it, but I might move. I might literally I've thought about it so many times. Being in Australia made me realize, oh, holy fucking shit, this country is run so much more rationally. It's just set up so much better. It makes sense the way it works. The people have to vote. The people aren't allowed to carry around guns just because there's no reason to. I mean, I shouldn't have brought that up because I don't want to turn off everyone who's into gun rights. I see the point of it. But again, the point of it's not what you think. The point of it's so you could fight your own government. The point of it's so you could have a civil war. Let's be honest. That's what they wrote it down for. We've lost sight of that so much to the point where we allow an agency that listens to every goddamn word we say so the government could squash with impunity any uprising. You think the National Security Agency is there to protect us from terrorists? Let me tell you something, George Bush, the first one, he literally worked with Bin Laden. You could look it up. He helped them. We armed them. He worked with them when the Russians were coming in. I think it's a coincidence that guy attacked us and then ignited this whole fiasco for a decade where we were distracted and doing bullshit around the world that had nothing to do with what originally happened. It's so depressing. It's all so, so depressing and absurd. So, look, depressed people are rational, man. Depressed people are smart. But depressed people realize how ludicrous so much of this is. So they'll listen to depressed people once in a while. And hopefully us depressed people inspire some of you optimistic people to do something that's actually going to change it. I'm not always depressed like this, but I am a lot of the time right now. I am. So yeah, not our funnest episode. All right, no guest. Hopefully we'll get him on still. If not, I hope this is you guys got something out of this. Viva la revolucion, yo.